As you know, February is Black History Month, a time when we explore the black experience in this country. Many of those stories here in North Carolina and across the South are either forgotten or not talked about much. Historian and author Tim Tyson has spent time uncovering and researching some of them. He'll join us on occasion over the next few weeks to tell us a few of the stories. And the first one he recounts took place in 1957 in Statesville, about 40 miles north of Charlotte.
I actually found it in the New York Times, a little bitty story about how two teenage girls had been found in a car. Judith and Martha Lambert had been found in a car with two black boys the same age as them. They were all teenagers, and at 2:30 in the morning. The police had seen them. The car took off, and they had a high-speed chase, and when they got out of sight of the police, they let the girls out of the car. And they went to walking home, and the young men took off. But the police caught them and then took them down to the police station and beat them up. And later, they found Judith and Martha Lambert walking down the highway trying to get home. They took them down to the police station, made them get back in the car with the two young black men, and had a photographer from the Statesville Record and Landmark snap their photograph, which was then on the front page of the local newspaper. 2 days later, the day that the story appeared on the front page, a mob of 600 people from Statesville, some of them dressed in Klan robes, came and burned a cross on the Lambert's front lawn, broke all the windows in their house, went in, destroyed all the belongings, while the police, who attended this event, escorted the Lambert family to the county line. They were banished from Statesville. And when I went up to Statesville to investigate this, I found out it was all about rock and roll. That what it was really about, I found some women who are now in their 60s who were friends of Judith and Martha, and they explained that what it was rock and roll, and it was all about the Z-Cats. The Z-Cats were this local doo-wop group. They were young black men. They were handsome. They were nice. They could really sing. And they played at dances and stuff, and people thought they were cool, and they were sort of dissolving the color line among the young. And what would happen is people would pile into the trunks of cars, and young people, and drive out in the country somewhere and spread some blankets in a field, and the Z-Cats would sing, and they would have a party, right? So they were young people having a party with this new rock and roll music.
Crossing race lines.
And crossing race lines. And the police got wind of it. You know, Statesville's a small town. Things like that happen. People know pretty quick. And the police started looking for them, and they couldn't catch them. They never did catch the Z-Cats and the young white folks and black folks who were having a party together. They knew it was going on. They were very upset. This had to be stopped. And what they did was they caught the Lambert sisters in this car at 2:30 in the morning coming home from one of these things. And so that is why they ran them out of town.
But the Z-Cats could perform in public as long as they were performing for blacks.
They played for white events too. Black performers could play at the frat house at UNC. You know, for sure in the 1950s, they were hiring black bands. I mean, if you've seen Animal House, you know, which is sort of set in the 60s, actually. But, you know, that's for real, you know.
But the idea that they would attract an interracial audience is the thing that scares people.
Yeah, in fact, in 1991, my friend Herman Bennett and I, he was teaching at UNC, and I heard that Percy Sledge was playing in Brown Summit, just a little north of Greensboro, at this country music bar. And we went up there, you know, Herman and I listened to records together all the time. So I called up Herman and said, "Herman, Percy Sledge, the immortal Percy Sledge." And we get in the car and we go up to Brown Summit to Allen's Country Nightlife. And we tried to go in, and Mr. Willits met us at the front door and said, "You know, we don't allow blacks in the club." Talking to me about Herman, who was black and standing beside me, he wouldn't talk to Herman.
Mm-hmm.
But they came out with baseball bats and made us leave. I tried to explain to him about the Civil Rights Act in 1964. He didn't really have a whole lot of interest in the
lot of patience. Well, you know, when you have a baseball bat in your hand, you really don't have to listen.
Apparently.
So, Tim, why is the Klan, the White Citizen Council, so upset, so fearful of rock and roll?
Well, you know, at African-American culture, I mean, African-American, the very term, is about many diverse peoples who were brought here in the slave trade and become one people, black Southerners, they become one people in opposition to white supremacy, in opposition to what Martin Luther King called the thingification of human beings. And at the heart of that culture that was born on these shores, you see, and it comes up through, you know, the spirituals and gospel and the blues and jazz and rock and roll and hip-hop. What comes, the drumbeat at the heart of that is the resistance to people being things, right? It's the resistance to white supremacy. And that is created the most powerful expressive culture in the history of the world, you know, came up out of the Black South. Everywhere all across the world, from China to Chile to Poland, when you have people standing up for the dignity of human personality, standing up for human rights, you will hear those voices. You will hear the voice of the Black South. It echoes around the world wherever people are standing up for their own humanity. And that the Klan heard. So when there are two young white boys driving in a pickup truck down the road in eastern North Carolina with their Confederate bumper sticker, listening to hip-hop as loud as they can, you know, irritating us middle-class, middle-aged people. They are basically saying to us, you cannot put me in a box, you know, drop dead.
I was going to say, right? Irritating and confusing us.
Right, right. We don't know what is up. But what is up is that they are saying, I am a person. I have my own thing here. Right, and they're expressing that through African American culture, because African American culture, at its very, from its very birth, was about resisting degradation, right, and resisting being thingified, and that's what it means. That's why African American culture almost dominates world culture. If you look at music, slang, style, art, from hip hop to slam dunk, we've got African-American culture all over the world. A tiny minority in one country is dominating world culture. Why is that? Because everywhere around the world, people are ruled by ruthless, reckless tyrants, and they don't like it. And when they hear African-American culture, they hear that drumbeat inside of it that says, I am not a thing, pal. I am not in favor of this.
So it's still alive today, and it's still motivating a human rights movement around the world.
Completely.
Tim Tyson, thank you.
Rock and roll was a threat to the Ku Klux Klan.
And it is here to stay. Tim Tyson, thanks very much.
Thank you, Frank.
Historian Tim Tyson is the author, most recently, of Blood Done Sign My Name.